four ways and means. We are represented from the Legislative Fiscal Office by Robin Lamont, and Joan Diaz is acting as our subcommittee assistant. Good afternoon, especially to Senator Avail Gordley. Senator Gordley, you honor us with your presence, and if you would like to go ahead and start off by testifying this afternoon, I invite you to come forward.
Thank you very much. Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Avail Gordley. I represent Senate District 10 in Portland. By way of helping you become a bit more familiar with my district, a landmark is Portland International Airport. And Mr. Chair, I'm also here to tell you that we intend to keep the international in airport. One of my duties this afternoon was to introduce the chair of the International Trade Commission, Alan Abravanel, who's just arriving, and I'm privileged to be able to do that. And Mr. Chair, it's also a privilege to serve with you as a legislative representative on the Oregon International Trade Commission. We serve as ex officio members. The commission membership, I believe, is another example of the many fine and talented Oregonians, business people, who voluntarily give service to their state by serving on commissions, such as the International Trade Commission. And I've had the pleasure to serve with this really wonderful group of people, and I was so pleased to be recently reappointed to the commission by our Senate President. I am here to state my strong support for the work of the International Trade Commission, its leadership, the budget before you. And with that said, I would like to just formally introduce Mr. Abravanel and ask him to come forward. Alan Abravanel is a partner in the Portland office of Perkins. And I'm going to need help with the, is it Coy?
Cooley.
Perkins Coy law firm. He is engaged in the practice of corporate and international law, including transnational agreements, contract law, acquisitions, mergers, securities offerings, and distribution and agency agreements. Mr. Abravanel was appointed in 1995 by Governor John Kitzhaber to serve as a member of the State of Oregon International Trade Commission and has served ably as chair of that commission since the beginning of 2000. Mr. Abravanel has also served as chair of the Latin America Subcommittee of the Portland Chamber of Commerce and as co-chair of the Oregon NAFTA Coalition. From 1972 to 1974, Mr. Abravanel resided in Lima, Peru, where he studied Peruvian legal and judicial institutions as a fellowship recipient from the International Legal Center of New York City. Mr. Abravanel received his Doctor of Laws degree at Harvard Law School in 1971, cum laude, and his Bachelor of Arts degree, magna cum laude, at Yale University in 1968, where he majored in European and Latin American history and was elected to membership in Phi Beta Kappa. Mr. Chair, aren't we blessed to have such a qualified leadership that we have seen from Mr. Abravanel. And again, it's a real privilege to sit here with him this afternoon and with all of you.
Thank you very much, Senator Gordley. I recognize also Werner Vildar in the audience. Werner is a member. And if you'd like to come forward, Werner, there's a spot for you at the table as well. So you're welcome to do that as a member of the commission. Chair Abravanel.
Thank you very much, Senator Gordley. Mr. Chair and members of the committee, I very much apologize for arriving literally seconds before I was introduced. I regret that the roads of Oregon have many cars on them today, and the parking spaces in Salem have many people in those parking spaces as well. So please accept my apologies. I had intended not to make such a grand entrance at the beginning of the meeting of the committee. Thank you very much, Mr. Chair, and members of the committee, for inviting me to speak today. I do have some prepared remarks. Would you prefer that I read those remarks into the record, or...
However you would like.
They're short. They're only about 5 minutes.
That'd be fine.
If I may do that, I'll just read those into the record. And I do have copies to give to the members of the committee. Senator Gordley has very kindly introduced me already, so I don't think I have to say too much about myself. I am chair of the Oregon International Trade Commission, and I've been serving in that capacity since the beginning of the year 2000. I have been a member of the commission since its inception in 1995. The commission's fundamental role is to assist in the development of Oregon's international trade. As we said in our first biennial report, Oregon produces what the world wants. Every day, Oregonians ship Oregon wheat and French fries to Asia, finished wood products and housing to Japan, and computers and computer components to Europe. Oregon workers and Oregon businesses benefit from the rapid growth of the world economy. The commission is organized by statute to have 9 voting members appointed by the governor and 2 non-voting ex officio members appointed by the president of the Senate and the speaker of the House of Representatives. We currently have 1 vacancy among the voting members, but I did want to point out just very briefly who the members of the committees are. We do have 2 vice chairs of the committee. One is sitting to my far left, Werner Wildauer from Hillsboro, Oregon. Tony Flagg from Pendleton, Oregon is the other vice chair. And our other members are Cindy Beck of Bend, Oregon, Tom Costable of Springfield, Mariano Diaz of Beaverton, Sho DeZono of Portland, and Catherine Mader of Corvallis. Our 2 non-voting ex officio members are also in the room, and of course, one of them has already been introduced, Senator Avell Gordley of Portland, and our other member is, of course, the chair of this committee, Representative Tom Butler of Ontario, Oregon. So we have many members of the committee of the commission in the room today. The commission was originally established as the Oregon International Trade Advisory Committee back in 1995, but the status of the group was changed to a commission in 1997. Nonetheless, the purpose of the commission really hasn't changed since its inception. We really have 3 things that we have been charged to look at by the statute. One is to serve as a body to advise governmental bodies, agencies, and private persons on the development and implementation of state policies and programs relating to international trade. Second, we're supposed to set policy for and monitor programs relating to and expanding international trade for the International Division of the Economic and Community Development Department. And third, we're supposed to recommend changes in state policies and programs relating to international trade. The Commission has been involved in this process since 1995, and as mandated by statute, we have also issued biennial reports. In fact, we've issued 3 biennial reports, which examine the activities of the International Division and set forth the views of the Commission on Oregon's international trade. I have a copy of our most current report here. I'm afraid I don't have copies for every member, but it's my understanding that these reports have been distributed to the members of the legislature. Since the founding of the Commission, we've emphasized 3 principal criteria for the operation of the International Division and the promotion of international trade. And I'd just like to touch briefly on what those 3 are, because I think it may be relevant to our discussion as we go forward. The first is the diversification of international markets. The Commission has sought to encourage the diversification of international markets for Oregon goods and services. The Commission noted early in its existence that the preponderance of goods being sold outside of the United States by Oregon businesses was destined for Asian markets. While the Commission is eager to maintain that healthy and growing alliance with Asian markets, the Commission believed that it would be prudent to encourage Oregon businesses to seek markets in other geographic areas in order to avoid the adverse effects of sudden downturns in selected geographic markets. We saw this in 1998 when there was, in fact, a downturn in the Asian market, and we were able to withstand it. In fact, our trade increased both because we had new markets in Asia, so Asia still stood up well for us, and we were developing other markets in other countries, in particular in Europe and in Mexico. The Commission has devoted extensive time and effort to prioritizing markets that appear to hold the most promise for small and medium-sized Oregon companies, which are the companies that the International Division is designed to serve. The Commission determined that the most promising markets, based on a number of criteria, would be in Europe and in Mexico. But, of course, we have pressed the International Division to expand Oregon's presence in these markets while continuing to reassess what the best markets might be. I'd like to touch on the other two brief criteria that we've used, which is the use of independent contractors. One of the things that we noted when the committee was first formed is that setting up offices overseas staffed by Oregon employees, paying rent and having to pay a number of expenses, can be quite expensive for the state of Oregon. We believe that the principal attribute of any trade expansion program should be nimbleness. That is, the ability to enter rapidly into new markets as they arise and as business in Oregon demands. After all, we are the International Division is an agency that should be responsive to the needs of Oregon businesses. With established offices requiring the renting of space, the hiring of permanent employees, the ability to move quickly is reduced. Moreover, with limited budgets, as we all know, and a desire to obtain good services for hopefully lower dollar expenditures, we believe that consultants make a more effective use of time and space than do setting up permanent offices. But of course, that has to be reexamined in every instance. Last, although this has not been a big problem in recent years, it was in 1995-96, we wanted to try to reduce unfunded mandates for the International Division. Our feeling was that there were a number of tasks being put upon the division, particularly in welcoming diplomatic missions, that were, somebody had to staff them, and of course it was perfectly reasonable to have somebody staff them, but they weren't being funded through the division, yet the division was having to do that work. Now, as the Commission continues its work, it will revisit these three areas of concern and focus its attention on matters of evolving trade policy. It's the task of the Commission and the task of all Oregonians to continue this work and to enable Oregonians, young and old, urban and rural, to be engaged in this dynamic and ever-stimulating globe. Thank you very much for allowing me to make my presentation here today. I'd be happy to answer any questions. And my colleague, Werner Wildauer, who is, of course, the vice chair of the commission, is also here to answer questions.
Thank you very much. Werner, would you like to make any comments for the record? You're welcome.
Well, for the record, I'm Werner Wildauer. I'm a member of the commission since 1995 also. And I'm the chairman of the board of Leupold and Stevens, a Oregon corporation that was founded in 1907, and we are competing worldwide in sports optics, and therefore we have some great level of experience in dealing internationally. One of my concerns has always been the great expectation that people have once they engage either the division or engage the agencies that the department has hired in saying that we should have immediate results in sales. That is an absolute wrong dream to have. It takes building relationships internationally before you can materialize any of these expectations. And we are trying to make that sure, especially to the owners of small companies that have great expectations and then are very much distraught when they return from trips without any contracts. And it needs to be understood that it takes maybe several years of hard work until you're there to have some real serious revenue. So that has always been one of my concerns. The other thing that I would like to report on is that there will be a meeting with Lufthansa again in late May, and we hope that combined we will convince these people to take up residence again at PDX. So hopefully that will work.
Excellent. I was fortunate to sit beside that gentleman that has two operations in Oregon, one in Corvallis and one in Wilsonville, I believe, that makes they do the landing plans, airport landing plans for pilots worldwide for video cassette, or not video cassette, but
for the for your CRT, your mini computers anyway, and we were flying into Denver. This was earlier this month, and as we flew into Denver, he'd got one of the last seats on an overbooked flight and sat next to me. And his comment was that the following day and a half later, this was on Thursday, Sunday would be the first of the Lufthansa flights round trip to Germany into Denver. Denver was initiating and inaugurating its first Lufthansa round trip flight, Denver to Germany. So I appreciate the work that you're doing there, Werner, and probably I just have to tell a couple of stories. These are really great people to serve with. Of course, who couldn't love Evelyn Gordley, bless her heart. She's more like a sister than like a senator, but I really feel that way. I really do, because she treats me like a brother. And I have an older sister, not that she's that much older, but...
I'm getting deeper here.
I have an older sister that treats me just like she does, and I feel very comfortable. I feel always excellent to be able to lather up in good company. But on a responsibility I had for Rotary International this past summer, to take a group of young professionals to Brazil, Mr. Bravenel, Alan, asked me, he said that you might just see if you can find out anything about my cousin in Brazil. He's a talk show host, and his name is Silvio Santos, and so when we got off the airplane in Salvador Bahia in northern Brazil, the first thing that hits me is the revista that says Silvio Santos, who is the Ted Turner of Brazil, has just bought out the big television companies in Brazil, my first host family, I said, what do you know? I bought the revista, and I said, what do you know about this fellow? And they said, well, you know, he's our daughter is one of the people that runs as a gripman for one of the camera crews that works with him. And I said, I happen to know somebody who's related to him. He said, well, don't say anything, but his name really isn't Silvio Santos. His name is Abravanel. I've come to find out that Mr. Bravenel, Silvio Santos, Mr. Bravenel's cousin in Brazil, is a very, very powerful and influential person. And I think that our gateway through Chair Bravenel's South American connections will be made much easier for the state of Oregon. And then also with the great help of Werner Wildauer, I appreciate the commitment that Leopold and Stevens have made to the state of Oregon and continuing the great work here. And I guess I was somewhat reminded when I was sitting next to this gentleman who happened to be from, I think it was from Leipzig originally, that I was sitting next to on the plane on the way into Denver, and he had emigrated a long time ago and had a very successful business doing exactly that, becoming very, very specialized, and had plants here in Oregon that helped with a lot of the, and they'd gotten, as a result of the work that they had been doing, they'd been doing a great deal of charting for undersea work here out of Oregon. So, again, I've expressed my appreciation for these three wonderful people dedicating huge amounts of time to the well-being of the state of Oregon and particularly to the International Trade Commission. Representative Greg Smith is recognized.
Thank you, Chair Butler. When I go down the list of commissioners, I see that very competent and very capable all the way down to those representatives and senators. But I'm surprised I don't see a name from the Port of Portland. And knowing what an active role they play in international trade, why is that?
And Representative Smith, we do work quite closely with the Port of Portland. They have appeared before us many times, and we have worked with them on a number of issues. I think the feeling is that people, most of the members, except for the two ex officio members, are from the private sector. So rather than have sort of cross-meshing of members of independent bodies, we thought it would be better to do that. I should point out, however, I'm not sure if that's the most current list. Sho DiZono is a member of our body, and he was a port commissioner. He's not now on the port commission, but he was a port commissioner. He's now chair of the Chamber of Commerce of the Portland Metropolitan Chamber of Commerce. So we do coordinate quite closely with the port. We don't always agree with them. We sometimes agree with them, sometimes we don't agree with them, but we do work quite closely with them.
Representative Ringel.
Thank you. I've just been trying to flip through some of my agency documents, but I got too much paper here. What's your budget?
The budget for the commission, the budget for the international division. The budget for the commission, we don't get paid, so there really is no budget. We get expenses reimbursed, and even those are rather nominal.
Your charge is to oversee the division.
We advise and recommend on issues of international policy. We do review the budget, but the budget really is handled by the Economic and Community Development Department. And there are representatives of both the division and the department who are here to answer those questions today.
Follow up, Representative.
I guess I'm aware of that, but I wanted to ask you as members of the commission about what your thought was in terms of the size of the division, whether if you had twice the budget, would it be doing three times as much good for the state of Oregon? How big should it be?
We have had proposals, Mr. Chair and Representative Ringo, we have had proposals on the back burner, I guess, for increased activities in certain markets, in particular China, as we know, other Asian markets, but also European and Latin American markets, and also even the possibility of doing something in Africa. We have always sort of been told what the basket of dollars would be, and then have tried to fit the program within that basket of dollars. Rather, occasionally we have said, well, if we had unlimited resources, what would we do?
Yes, follow up.
I mean, that's kind of why I'm asking is, you'd like to think you'd go at it the other way. You'd figure out what your need is, and then try to obtain the resources to accomplish what's needed. And I'm just wondering what your thoughts are. I mean, what do we need to do?
Well, the budgetary process has not worked that way, I don't think. I think it has worked that we have basically been told how much money there is available, and then we've had to prioritize what we think are the most important things to accomplish. So I don't think we've been given unlimited resources and then told, come in and tell us everything you'd like to do, and then we'll see how it works. I think we've pretty much been given a target number and then tried to prioritize our goals within that target number.
The reason the presentation is being given to this budget committee is because our job is to try to determine what your budget ought to be, what it ought to be approved. And that's why I'm asking, and I'm just wondering if you can shed any light on that.
Mr. Chair, if I may just interrupt just for a moment, because I need to apologize and take my leave. I have four bills up in work session in another committee, but I do want to reply, Mr. Chair, Representative Ringo, just briefly, that the commission does work from a strategic plan. And as we get into our presentation this afternoon, and as you hear from Director Doyle and others, that strategic plan and its genesis will become clearer to you, as will the opportunities that are out there for Oregon that we may not be taking advantage of now because we have chosen not to invest more resources.
I will look forward to receiving that information.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Senator Gordley. You've honored us again with your presence today, and certainly the it's evidence of your obvious power and strength in this building to have four bills be heard the same day. I can't get one in a week. So, Senator Carno.
Well, I just wanted to thank Senator Gordley for coming also, and you just must excuse Representative Butler. It is his birthday today, so it's his sentiment.
And as much as I don't get to give my sister a hug, I really miss my sister.
I'm glad you didn't say older sister again.
She's only just a year older than I am. Don't get to see her very often. Thank you very much, Senator. Representative Johnson is recognized.
Thank you. I have two questions. The first one is born out of an experience that I had personally. I was in the helicopter business. We had a very small company, but we were exporting some helicopter parts to Korea and approached the department, and this was a number of years ago, and frankly struggled to get help. So my question to you is this: how are contacts with businesses, particularly small businesses, made? Do you proactively go out and seek companies where you think you are showcasing the best and the brightest to our European and South American and Asian markets? Or do you wait and take whatever comes through the door and hope you can dress them up good enough to be attractive clients internationally? Has the Commission wrestled with how do you select the clients that you're representing?
Let me, Mr. Chair, Representative Johnson, let me see if I can address some of those. First of all, I hope this bad example didn't happen recently. Was this many years ago? Or?
Several years ago.
Several years ago. Obviously, this is not something we would like to perpetuate. I think a better way to answer this might be, if I may, Mr. Chair, to ask Mr. Doyle to join us at this point.
Please, I think that would be appropriate if Mike Doyle would come up.
Mike Doyle is the Executive Director of the International Division. But while he is coming to the table, one thing I might say is the staff of the division in Portland do go out and try to solicit any small and medium-sized companies that need assistance in trade overseas. It's not a showcase of, let's say, only certain selected companies. Any company that needs assistance should be able to get assistance from the State Division, the International Division.
What I'm asking is for clarification. Mr. Doyle doesn't just sit in his office and intuit that XYZ helicopter company needs help.
That's absolutely right.
Is it incumbent upon me to approach the department, or is the department proactively scanning the horizon for companies that they think have an opportunity to make sales abroad? I think particularly of the fine optical material that you guys have been building for 100 years. Clearly, if your department or your company didn't already have a relationship with the department, I would think that your company would be a prime candidate to advocate for in a international market. But I'm trying to get a sense, is there a checklist? If anybody comes through the door and they have a product that you think maybe has no chance of being marketed in Asia, and they want to market in Asia, does somebody put a brotherly arm around their shoulder and say, this dog doesn't hunt? What's your relationship with little companies?
Mr. Chair, Representative Johnson, we solicit companies actively. We do this from the staff positions, calling people when we get trade leads or those type of opportunities and sending them out to the producers of those products in the state of Oregon. But we also work across the state. And
I'm going to interrupt you because I don't understand.
Okay.
How do you solicit them? Let's say I'm a winery, or I mean, how do you come to me?
In many different ways. We have a network throughout the state, made up through the small business development centers, local chambers of commerce, international trade associations, business associations, commodity groups in the case of agriculture. We work with, actually the way that we get most of our referrals is from satisfied clients. Companies that have come to us, used our services, have gone back to people in their communities and said, this worked for me, you should try it. That, by far and away, is the way that we find most people. That being said, we have been throughout the state, this biennium, putting on educational programs where we meet a lot of companies, where we do technical assistance training. We put out the newsletters that go out to over 2,000 people in the state. We go and work with the chambers and send our staff down to the local communities, and they bring in their business people.
Where and how?
I mean, I would submit to you, I'm as plugged in as anybody in watching the economic development opportunities in Columbia and Clatsop County. Mm-hmm. What venue do you come to when you say you put on programs?
We would put on educational programs. We would work with the chambers where we would say, let's, to pick a town, Eugene, where we would work with the Eugene Chamber of Commerce or the U.S. Department of Commerce's district office in Eugene, where we would send staffers down to Eugene for a day or two, and we would tour factories. We would meet with the companies to see what their specific needs are, come back and follow up with them, would be an example of one venue. We would participate through the Small Business International Trade Office that does basic educational programming for companies that are interested in export or brand spanking new to export, where we would go down and either be a presenter at those programs or be there as a referral service for those companies to use our litany of services that we offer in the division. So there's just dozens of ways that we contact companies on a regular basis. This year, for this biennium, if you look at the universe, if you will, of active exporters in the state of Oregon, you're going to see about 1,500 companies on that list. We, through our programs during this biennium, have worked with about one out of every three of those companies.
Can you provide this, follow-up, Mr. Chairman, can you provide this committee with a list of two things? The venues in which you have presented informational seminars and the list of companies that you are currently assisting.
Sure. We can do that.
And then as long as I'm following this line of questioning, I have one more follow-up for Mr. Doyle.
One more. I've been recognizing Mr. Doyle has been on the job as the director or as a chairman of the or the director of the commission for a little over a year.
Okay. Mr. Doyle, how does the structure right now of your contacts in Europe, South America, and Asia work?
Okay. I would refer you, first of all, to the handout, and would refer you to page 12 in that handout, which basically would give you a, if you will, a 10-step program on how services flow that would work you from the contact, how we would find out what the company's interests are, how we would assess those interests, how we would network in with our foreign offices or foreign representatives or other services to deliver programs that the company is interested in. And I mean, I can read it, but it's just as easy for you to read those services.
Thank you. Representative Smith is recognized.
Thank you, Chair Butler. As a follow-up to Representative Johnson, I hope in this presentation you can talk with us about the role you serve as a liaison with existing companies and how you folks assist in moving containers across the dock, which if you're trying to move a container in the Philippines can be a troubling item, or how you work with companies helping them know how to pay a tariff and what a tariff is, working with international currency, or helping talking about the role you play in helping companies understand credit terms
mm-hmm.
and how to gain credit or how credit is extended and how that works.
Okay.
Because I see that as a person who has done a lot of international travel as probably the key role you folks play in helping existing Oregon businesses.
It is, Representative. And one of the things that is a cornerstone of what we do is exactly what you're talking about, is problem solving. Because we approach this from the standpoint of, if I can help you solve your problem that you have, and all of the trade managers, by the way, have had private sector international experience before coming to government, if I can help you solve your problem, then it is going to be much easier for me to convince you to have your company use our marketing services. Because it is more and more difficult as time goes by to come and say, we're the government and we're here to help you. We have to be able to provide concrete assistance that develops a system of trust with those companies. Then they get involved in our marketing programs. And very much, Representative Johnson, that's somewhat the answer to your question is, we look at this as a holistic approach to international, being able to provide educational services to gain in capacity building of the companies, to be able to provide trade leads, and we've provided over 1,500 trade leads this biennium to to companies. That's not number of companies. That's actual leads that have touched sometimes multiple companies. When they get those leads, many of the companies will follow up on them. Many of them won't. But at the same time, for the companies that are new to export, and one of the things I think you're addressing, Representative Smith, one of the things that happens is it whets their interest in the market. And they say, maybe there is the opportunity for my product to flow into that marketplace. And so consequently, through developing those relationships over time and having them travel with us on either pavilions in our trade shows or the trade missions that we conduct or working with us with buying delegations that come into the state, we really try to develop a very close and active client service provider relationship with them. And we try to approach this, if you will, from more of a, what I would say, a private sector approach than opposed to, you know, everything is a cookie cutter approach through government. What we really try to do is take the individual company, and of course we're going to have generic programs for them to use, but try to take those programs and structure them for the specific needs of those companies, which comes back, Representative Johnson, to your question on if somebody comes into your office and has a green widget that isn't going to sell in Saudi Arabia, do we tell them that? Yes, we do. In fact, one of the things that we have done with Jebson and Company, who is our representative in Shanghai, as we do with all of our offices, when companies come to us and ask for an initial market assessment when they're new to market, we will give them, and I didn't bring a copy today, but a 2 or 3 page general assessment of the viability of their product in the market, who their competition is, where it's coming from, how it's priced, how it's displayed, etc. That company then will make the decision either to go forward or in many cases say, A, I'm not ready for this, B, the competition's too stiff, or we would say the green widget just won't sell into that marketplace. In many instances, and I'll finish with this thought, in many instances they will come back to us and ask for more in-depth market research into that market, which we will provide, which will really give them, if you will, the guts, for lack of a better phrase, on what they can do and where the competition is and what some strategies might be, potential agents, distributors, those type of things for the market that they're interested in.
I just had a follow-up.
Representative John Smith.
I hope you'll also talk about the role you play, almost acting as if you were an SBDC, with companies that are now ready to do international work, and the role you're able to play. For example, a company that wants to do business in Shanghai, it could be a wasted trip if they knew they didn't have an interpreter in Shanghai. Where in Hong Kong, you perhaps would have someone who could speak English, and I think that's a role you folks play. And I hope you'll share the basic level of advice you also play.
I'd like to respond to that, Mike.
I'd respond to the question because my presentation is not going to get into the details you're asking, Representative Smith. But we do provide those services. I mean, basically, whenever we were taking a trade mission anyplace where a company is traveling and using our services abroad, they, in essence, would get a checklist from us. Are you ready? Are you prepared? Do you have? Before they go. In many instances, we find that, not many instances, sometimes companies will basically sit there and say, you know, that's a market I want to be in. You know, I know that the research said it isn't the best match for me. You know, I know I'm not as skilled in exporting maybe as others, but doggone it, that's where I want to go. And we try to facilitate that as best as we can. We do discourage people from pursuing some markets that they're not quite ready for. For example, I would go back, and I use China. You could plug in Russia or a lot of other countries where there are very, very difficult market conditions that companies that are maybe exporting to one or two countries, you know, and sit there and say there's 1.25 billion Chinese out there, of which 30% would be considered middle class by our definition, my product would sell to those people. But the company isn't really ready for that market. That's one of the things that we do go through, is trying to educate them upon what they need to have within their own company relative to capacity building.
Representative Johnson is recognized.
Thank you, sir. You mentioned a couple of times that you have pavilions at trade shows or you go on trade missions. Is there a fee for service?
There is. We have two type of programs. We have the fee-for-services programs for like the trade missions where we charge the companies a fee to participate in the mission.
Does that cover your costs?
Over time it does, yes. Individual events, maybe, maybe not. But if you look at it on a ongoing basis, yes, it would. Our direct costs in country. Now, it may not cover our travel costs and those type of things for the staff, but I look at it more of what comes out of our pocket in country to deliver the services.
I guess philosophically, why should the public, in essence, be subsidizing those kinds of trips where you're becoming the marketing arm for a handful of select companies?
I guess I would answer it this way, Representative Johnson. I don't believe we are becoming the marketing arm for those companies. Just like anybody in Oregon that manufactures a widget or provides a service, we have products that the state has developed for them to utilize. If they choose to do that, the responsibility for developing that market, having the product, pricing the product, shipping the product, finding the qualified agent distributors, setting up their networks, that is all the company's responsibilities, and the company is making the investment to do that. I have with me today four companies that have used our programs, and I think in some ways they may be better qualified than I am to tell you about exactly what type of resources their companies put into market development initiatives that they undergo overseas. But I think that in economic development in general, our role is to develop programs and services that can be utilized by companies to better their economic conditions, i.e. create jobs, expand sales, whatever you want to look at relative to performance measures. And so we are developing the programs that give them the opportunity to do that. Yes, only certain ones may go on that particular mission, but at the same time, there's a large number of companies that are utilizing our services. I said earlier that about one out of every three companies involved in exports today comes through our door in one fashion or another during a biennium. Over half of those, about 60% of those companies, come through our door utilizing multiple services in multiple markets. So if you look at what Chair Bravenel has talked about relative to market diversification, where we have opened the representative office in China with Jepson, where we have opened the representative office in Mexico with Trade Management Services, or Europe with Representation Bridge. All these things are looking to diversify the markets that Oregon companies are working in. In fact, over 60% of the companies that come through our door, I think the percentage is like 61.5 roughly, that come through our door are new to market people for the services that they use it. So again, we're very much keying in on the issue of market diversification and what we're doing.
Okay.
Mike, perhaps it would be good for you to take us through the handout that we have, and if you'd like to do that and then incorporate within that some of the folks that you have that have experience in the market, maybe, excuse me, that would answer some of the questions which members of the committee may have. If you'd like to go about it in that fashion, I just, by way of suggestion, Senator, you is ready.
Before he goes through the material, I have a question for the commissioners.
Certainly.
As well as for Mike Doyle.
Certainly. Please proceed,
yes.
Senator. Yes.
I'll ask this question, and I hope I'll get that in writing also. In Oregon, one out of seven jobs is related to international trade. And with Delta not stopping in Portland anymore, what is the division's strategy to promote international trade and get the most out of the state's investment? And when you give it back to me in writing, I hope you give me an executive summary of no more than 2 pages, double spaced, because I don't have time to read books and books of material that comes back from one or two questions. But I would appreciate a response.
Thank you, Senator. And your question has been noted. I know this Mike pointed that question down. So
I have 5 more questions, so I'll ask them after Mike Doyle's presentation.
Okay. Mike, however you'd like to take us, did you want to
Maybe the commissioners want to respond now for the time being, for a short response. The commissioners, while they're here.
Mr. Chair, Senator Yee, we can respond briefly, but I think we do have a strategic plan for the development of trade opportunities. I missed one key word with did you say data?
Delta.
With Delta leaving. Mm-hmm. Of course, that is primarily an issue that the port has been grappling with. My colleague on the commission, Mr. Vildauer, has addressed that issue of the possibility of Lufthansa coming in. What the port tells us is that it will take a long time to get an Asian flag carrier back into the port of Portland. It's a very difficult issue for the port. We have worried about that, too, not only because of the transport of individuals back and forth between Asia, but from a business standpoint, the more important thing is the transport of air cargo, and whether or not that will be a detriment to the future development of international trade in the state of Oregon. Much of what we do today in international trade relies on just-in-time delivery of goods, and primarily goods. And if you can't get those goods on a flight within 24 hours or even shorter time period sometimes, you may lose a competitive advantage. So the loss of the Delta connection is quite a serious setback to the state of Oregon. Now, what are we planning to do about it? Well, there are a number of strategies that could be pursued. I think the port is looking at a number of them. Enhancing the short-haul carriage, maybe to Seattle or to San Francisco, so that people can get better connections for their goods and also for individuals. Trying to encourage another flag carrier to service the port. Trying to get connections to other markets, such as Europe. All of those are on the table, and there's been a special committee that has been established in not only in Portland, but I don't know who all the members are. I'm a member, although I've not been able to attend any meetings, focusing on this very issue of air service to the to Portland and to the state of Oregon in general.
And I want to commend Chair Bravenel. You certainly went above and beyond the call of duty to try and work with Delta to make sure that anything we could do to hold the direct connection to the Far East, I think they were probably here a lot longer than they otherwise would have been had you not jumped in and helped out as much as you had. So we appreciate that. And Werner, please.
Besides the Delta issue, there were also some major issues with the U.S. Customs Service here and at PDX. And so many of us firms have changed our shipping process going to San Francisco or Los Angeles via a different carrier, or even trucking goods to Los Angeles and then flying them either into Asia or into Europe. So that was not the only issue that created problems. There has been something positively done with the customs office here in Portland, and we hope that things can return to normal.
And I would like to acknowledge the commission, the members of the commission, not the commission itself, but the members, certainly yourselves, the two commission members here, as well as Sho DeZono and others who dove right in. I mean, everybody had a dog in that fight amongst the commissioners that were anxious because they all had overseas connections. And when you look at the caliber of the people that are involved here, they don't need the commission as much as the commission needs, Oregon needs the commission. So, really,
Earlier, Representative Johnson asked some questions about how companies like ours would address the agency. I don't wish to sound arrogant, but we have not at all ever dealt with any agencies. We felt it's our business to go about marketing our goods worldwide, but we have a long-standing experience for the last 50 years of doing that. And we help other smaller companies with little mini seminars that we hold in our own facility to learn how to approach them. But now we direct them to the agency because there is a different structure there that will be definitely helpful. So just a comment.
Thank you very much, Werner. Representative Johnson is recognized.
Thank you.
Mr. Doyle or members of the commission, I guess one of the things that's puzzling to me is that in looking at the performance measures that for you, the export programs that are enumerated in this recent audit, it seems to me that much of your measures are activity measures rather than the production of jobs or numbers of sales in terms of dollars. How do you, would it not be reasonable to ask what the return on your activities are translated into gross sales overseas or jobs produced here?
Representative, yes, I think that is reasonable. We do measure ourselves a great deal by activities to look at the effectiveness of our programs. But at the same time, if you were to look at, and again, my apologies for not having seen that report to know what's in it, but one of the things that I was going to bring up to you, and also on page 13 in the handout that I gave you, there are the performance measures. These are slightly dated, maybe by a couple of weeks, and if you would allow me, I'd just like to go through them a little bit with you and explain why I think they are individually important. Again, number of companies assisted. There are, as I said, about 1,500 exporters in the state. We've touched, here it says 457 of them, so roughly one out of every three.
This is over a period of how long?
This is over a period of this biennium, up through probably the middle of March. That's important to us because it tells us if we are developing effective programs that meet the needs of the companies that are out there, or if we are finding sales opportunities for those companies or whatever, it says to us that we are getting out and touching a significant number of companies in the state relative to their international needs. The number of new-to-market companies assisted, 61.3%. That's important to us because of the state dependence, if you will, upon the Asian market for most of its trade, somewhere in the neighborhood of 60-some-odd percent, which you can find farther back in the handout in some of the graphs and charts that we've provided for you for your review. The dollar amount of projected sales through our sponsored activities. Now, this isn't trade leads that we've sent out or anything else. These are the missions and the shows and those type of things that we have developed. Companies have reported to us roughly $19.75 million of projected sales that they believe will opportunities that they have picked up from participating in the activities that we have organized for them, whether that be when they've traveled overseas working with the foreign offices, whether they have participated in a trade mission, whether they have met with a buying delegation that has come back. We follow up each of those type of activities with a survey of the companies saying, what did you get out of this activity? And that is what they have reported back to us. We do have a process that we are beginning to put in place that will do 6, 12, and 18-month follow-ups with the companies to find out exactly what business did come out of those activities relative to those projections. As far as actual sales, these are dollar sales on the nail that have been consummated through the activities that we have had companies participate in, roughly is $16.4 million through the first, 15 months, 14 months of this biennium. So those are our hard dollar sales that have been reported to us by the companies, and I think I will also yield to the companies that are here today to talk to you a little bit more about the timing of how long it takes them to get into foreign markets.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Johnson, follow up and then Senator Yee.
Mr. Chair, with your indulgence, would like to renew my request for, number one, who are the companies, who are the 457? How the number of new to market companies assisted, how you assisted them, in number two. Number four is the amount of actual sales were $16 million, I'd like to know, as opposed to what the total cost of the program are. Number eight, educational seminars in 46 in 12 communities, I'd like to know what communities. And number nine, overseas trade promotion events. You did 31 events with 232 companies. I'd like the participating companies, if you wouldn't mind.
Companies list as well?
Yes, please.
Okay.
And we might as well have...
Sorry.
Mr. Chairman, why don't we have the dates of the seminars in 11 in the places?
The 31 events?
In 29 in four countries?
The product seminars?
The,
under.
The dates and the places?
Sorry,
Mr. Chairman, my question is, how do you verify the actual sales from division sponsor activities, $16.3 million?
The companies report them to us on an individual basis.
Do they another question.
Follow-up, sorry.
Do they provide you a copy of their sales contract so you can see the name of the company, the sales amount, the nature of the product?
No, they do not, Senator.
So how do you verify it without their showing you the sales document?
The companies report to us the sales that they have made relative to their activities as follow-ups. We, quite frankly, have no reason to question their motives to provide us with erroneous information. I guess as we work with our clients and as we develop trust between ourselves and our clients, we expect them to report us accurate information that comes out of these events. And again, I would yield to the companies that are here today to answer that question.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator, you follow up on that?
Well, we are using public dollars, and we need to verify these figures so we know that our investment is having the kind of return we expected to have. And I don't understand, why don't you ask for documents to verify these information so we know the program is, in fact, effective?
Again, I would yield to the companies that are here to answer that question for you, Senator. I believe it does have something to do with the issues of confidentiality and also the working relationship that we have with our clients.
Thank you very much, Mr. Doyle. Senator Yee?
Mr. Chairman, as decision maker and policy maker, we need good information for us to make decision on whether programs are effective and have the kind of return on investment we expect to have. Without verification, we do not have that kind of good information, and the department needs to ask for that information and provide it to us. I asked for that information many times and have not been able to receive this information. And how do we evaluate the consultant's job without having that kind of information? And I talked to our legal counsel, and we are entitled for this information, and if necessary, the committee can issue subpoena for that information. We don't want to go that far, but I think this information is necessary for us to make good decisions.
Thank you, Senator. I think Director Doyle's position is that they have not been asking for the copies of invoices from the companies. The companies have just been merely providing them the dollar amounts. I think that as long as they have the dollar amounts and no further information, I think Mr. Doyle has expressed his willingness to provide us the dollar amounts, but not having any further information. And I would say this: we do have in the room present today some folks that are doing some business internationally through the international division, and they may want to actually disclose some information. However, recognizing the sensitivity of some of the information, I've checked just a little bit with some of our legislative fiscal counsel. And I am concerned that there are some contracts which are very, very sensitive relative to certain projects overseas right now. They may be willing to divulge, you know, the type of business that they're in and the countries that they are doing business with through the international division, but they may not be willing to tell us the contracts with whom and the amount. And that's, but again, whatever the department has, I think that Director Bravenel and our Director Doyle and Chair Bravenel would be happy to provide us, but I don't
I
know
think
that
they need, Mr. Chairman, they need to ask for it so we can verify the information and make sure that our dollars are well spent and have the kind of result we ask for. I think that the contractor in Shanghai promised 20 to 30 product sales, and so far the division said to me you have made 6 sales in the amount of $1 million, and I would like to know which companies, what products, and what is the amount, and I would like to see documentation that can verify those sales so that we can evaluate the effectiveness of the program. I don't think it would take very long to ask for it, and when the information comes to the committee, we can do it in a way that will keep it very confidential and not be a public knowledge. We'll keep it within this committee.
Thank you very much, Senator Yee. Let's do this. Come back and Director Doyle, would you like to? We've already touched base on a couple of the pages, and some of the several of the first pages are basically informational as to staff and then areas of representation. What would be your preference right now relative to bringing forward those other folks that who have presently who are engaged in some of the overseas activities and who have utilized the services of International Division? We'll let you go ahead and decide how you'd like to proceed in your presentation. Senator Yee?
Mr. Chairman, my question is, when will you be able to provide the information for us to evaluate Jepson's contract?
Mr. Chair, may I comment on Mr. Chair, Senator Yee? Certainly the members of the legislature and obviously the members of this committee have the right to information to assess how the monies of the state should best be spent. Nobody's denying that. The question is, what level of information should be provided? I think it is fair to say that when we provide services to companies, first of all, we have not told them that they would be required to provide details, including contracts, about the kinds of transactions they have been involved in. I think this would come as a surprise to many customers, of the division. Secondly, I do think there is an issue of confidentiality. I do think that if that information were disclosed, that under the laws of Oregon, it might not be protectable from public disclosure. Third, it sounds to me as though the level of inquiry that you're suggesting is not dissimilar from what would occur if someone had a tax return audited. It's a much higher level than I think most people would understand in using state services. I think if they report what their sales are, if they report zero, nobody punishes them. It's not a question of getting their wrist slapped if they say they didn't make a sale. I think the state should rely on what those people report. If, in fact, they didn't make a sale, they didn't make a sale. That's the end of the inquiry. If they did report making a sale, it seems to me that's information that you may want to know, but that should be the measure of effectiveness, not an inquiry by the staff of either the legislature or by us as to what the terms of each and every contract state. I think that's really going into an area that the companies would prefer that we not go.
But, Mr. Chairman, my question is, how do you report 6 sales in the amount of $1 million without documentation?
Well,
so I'm interested in seeing that documentation that verifies the 6 reported sales by the division in the amount of $1 million. So all I'm asking for documentation to verify this information so that we can, in fact, say this is the result. This is not the result we are looking for, because we are looking for the promised 20 to 30 sales. But however, we need some documentation to verify this information.
Mr. Chair, Senator Yee, just to finish this discussion for now, maybe where we're differing is on the level of documentation. I don't think anybody is saying we won't provide you with information about the sales, but you had stated in an earlier statement that you wanted copies of the contracts, you wanted invoices, you wanted basically a description.
No, I didn't say invoices.
I thought I heard the word invoices, but if I didn't, I apologize. And I think that level of documentation is what's creating the difficulty here. But if you want the background information on how we came up to the number of six sales and the dollar number, I think we can provide that information.
To some extent, Alan. Most of our companies that we deal with do go back to the Oregon statute relative to their protection level on what they're expected to disclose to receive state services. And the particular statute in question basically gives them the expectation of confidentiality relative to strategic plans, clients, sales, costs, those type of things which are now being asked for. Our clients have that expectation under Oregon statute not to have to divulge those types of proprietary information relative to their particular businesses and their clients. In addition to that, those companies, and in all of our companies in dealing with us, those statutes are cited to those companies and they have those expectations. In addition to that, if they are not comfortable with the coverage provided by Oregon statute, we also have an agreement that we sign with the companies, and some of the companies here today have signed this agreement. And if you would please indulge me, I will read you a small paragraph of that service agreement, which says, per Oregon revised statutes, protecting company confidential information and all data collected by the division, including information contained in this form that constitutes A, company financial statements, B, customer lists, C, production, sales, or cost data, D, marketing strategy information that relates to the company's plan to address specific markets, or E, information on the company's strategy, regarding specific competitors will be treated as confidential unless the division receives approval from the company to use this information in a public forum. The division may, however, disclose the data in aggregate with similar data collected from other companies so long as the company's specific data cannot be identified. And we have been doing that. I mean, that is what has been presented to you today. That is what has been presented, Senator Yee, to you and other members of the China Task Force over the last roughly 6 months or more on what's coming out of the specific programs in China. So our companies do have certain expectations of confidentiality relative to their business. And I do believe, from my standpoint, as a person who works closely with those companies and as a person who administers these programs, I believe that for the purposes of what we're doing, taking them at their word that they are conducting this business in those markets should be sufficient information provided back. Now, we may vary on that, but I believe that that is sufficient because these gentlemen sitting behind me here in the second row, we work with, we trust implicitly. They tell us some of their strategies for specific markets that they hold very near and dear. Again, this gets back to Representative Smith's question about problem solving, trust, and relationship, and how are we going to help people and their companies move forward in an economic environment. We are more than happy to report in the aggregate. I do think that we are providing our clients a disservice, and we are also going past their protection in Oregon statute and other documents that we have provided to them relative to confidentiality in specific transactions. So I do have some hesitancy in providing the type of detail, Senator Yee, that you have requested. Relative to the performance of the Jebsen contract, I would submit today and for the staff that can be copied and provided to the members of the committee an update of the Jebsen contract and performances associated with each of the measures in that contract relative to April 20th of this year, so basically last week, which will show you in essence that the issues that Jebsen and the division do have the ability to control, the deliverables that we have in that contract that we have control over, we are in essence going to meet all of those requirements with the exception of number of sales made and number of agents distributors signed. Again, two issues that I think if you were to talk to most states' international departments, these are things that we will look at but are not normally components of the contracts themselves, because A, neither we as staff of the state or B, the service provider overseas can actually execute that transaction. And the example I would give you is this. The marketing manager on my staff in Portland goes out and visits with a company. That company, we give them an opportunity that we think is good for them, whether it be a market research report or something else. That company comes back to us and says, I like this. This looks like it could work for us. We take them on a trade mission overseas. We set up a litany of appointments for them with either end users of their products or people who may be potential distributors of their products. Those companies then find a match of a buyer of their product. In negotiations with them, the end user in that market says to them, Representative Butler, for Butler and Associates, we can buy your green widgets for half as much in Indonesia. And the manufacturer in this case says, can't meet that price. Now, and he does not make the sale. Now, where was the fault of either the agency or the distributor, or our service provider in that scenario? Because the company cannot consummate a transaction for whatever the reason may be. In this particular example, I would say cost. So, holding us to those type of standards where we really have no control, and this comes back to Representative Johnson's question about, you know, a lot of the things that you track are event or activity or action-oriented things. That's absolutely true, because that's what we do. We develop capacity, we create opportunity, and we create venues which that opportunity can be acted on. What we cannot do as a government agency or a representative of a government agency is consummate the transaction. And again, I would yield to the companies that are here today to address that specific issue.
With the time limitation that we have, I think it might be good to just move on to that. Did you have a question you wanted to ask right now, or Representative Smith?
I guess it's just a quick comment in the form of a question. It sounds like what you're saying is that the relationship you have with these companies is very similar to that of a Small Business Development Center counselor with a new business startup that comes through the door. Just the magnitude of the companies perhaps are a little larger, but the need for confidentiality is no less than that of someone who is working with us.
Similar to the testimony we heard yesterday regarding the Small Business Development.
Not knowing that testimony, I would agree. And I would also say, Representative Smith, if you were to go into this document, one of the things that is presented in the document, and forgive me for having to look here, on page 10, would basically give you an outline of the companies that we deal with, what it looks like, you know, where the rubber hits the road. They're privately held firms, thus even more need for confidentiality because they're not publicly reported firms. They're in the manufacturing industry. The average number of employees is 54. So therefore, there is, you know, concern for keeping the longevity of their company alive for either the heirs or the workers or anything else. Annual sales, roughly $15 million a year, which is actually a fairly high amount of sales for that number of employees, but also tells you a little bit about the Oregon economy and the swing that we have relative to information technology or other technological, environmental tech, or whatever you like to look at. The specification and the niches that are available to these companies overseas on very high price, very technically sound products that they have a great deal of time and money invested in protecting that proprietary information that we're talking about to hear.
Follow up, Representative.
I know time's of the essence. I think one point that really needs to be made is the fact there's a lot of smaller companies that participate in the international arena that if even the slightest bit of information about their product or their sales approach was known, larger companies would take them out of the market in about 5 minutes. And that's why these companies are so protective of the information they have. And that's just the facts of life in the international arena. Yeah.
I couldn't agree with you more.
Oh, go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, this information does not verify
the sales that you indicate here. I'm only asking for documents you use to verify your report of 3 signed sales and 5 pending, and this is different from what Ms. Sherry Shan said to me. She said 4 signs, 4 sales, and she said 6 signed and 4 pending. So this is different. So I would like the company, the department, to ask for documents that will verify these information, especially with the auditor's report saying out of 19 reports of the department, only 3 were accurate. And out of 25 projects, you only surveyed 7. So I would like to get actual, accurate information. So I am requesting documents that will verify these sales that are reported here so we know they're accurate and so we can make our decision based on accurate and complete and verified information. And that's a very fair request.
Thank you, Senator Dean. Representative Rangel,
please. Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I was just going to say that in the 20 minutes we have left, I would like to hear from the industry.
Yes, I think that's very important.
Yes, you're right. And also, there's a professor here who's going to report his analysis. And I would like him to be able to make his presentation before 3 o'clock, if Chairman will allow him.
Let's go ahead with, let's go with the companies that Chair Doyle has brought, Director Doyle has brought. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Chair Robin Allen, Vice Chair Vildar.
Mr. Chairman, I have 6 questions for Ms. Doyle, and I submit it in writing.
Okay, good. Excellent. Thank you very much. Just go ahead and pull up another chair there, and then identify yourselves for the record as you speak, and then we'll make sure that we'll have it on the record. Thank you very much. Please go ahead and start, whoever would like to.
Mr. Chair. For the record,
pull the mic over there. Yes. Thank you very much.
For the record, my name is Ted Pittman. I'm with Ultratape Industries here in Salem. I'm not exactly sure where to start. I've heard a lot today.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Representative Ringo, please.
Can I just throw out a question so we get going here to the visitors? Is that okay?
Yes, that'd be fine.
Thanks. This is what I'd like to know. Most industry has trade groups, whether you're ag or high-tech or machinery, they have trade groups. And so I'm wondering, why is it more efficient to have this kind of trade representation done by the state of Oregon? And why is that something the taxpayer should pay for as opposed to having somebody in that trade organization handle it privately?
Representative Ringo, I'm Kevin Stewart. I am president of Concrete Treatment Systems in Portland, Oregon.
Okay.
When you have a trade association, they represent everyone nationally. We, as a company, had looked at China. We currently and have been exporting and marketing to Russia, Japan, Korea, Okinawa, into the Philippines.
Aggregate?
No, I'm sorry, but construction materials, concrete. We manufacture water-based sealants for concrete buildings, block buildings, brick buildings. We had tried to look at China and were unable to. And when the OECD came to us and offered us an opportunity, we took benefit of that opportunity. And working with Sunan and with John Eng and with Mike, we did fill out the forms. They did do a background for us. We did choose to go over. We have now been involved with them for over a year, just over a year. I have made 9 different trips to China. We have an agent that has offices in 9 or 10 different provinces. And we have through patience, through the commitments, and through the hard work and the energy of being over there, we have several jobs and several projects. One that I can announce today is that we were chosen, or our products were chosen, over other products worldwide for application to the Three Gorges Dam. which is being built since 1993 and will be finalized in the year 2009. So that's quite a feather, not only for our company and our products, but also for the state of Oregon and the OECD. It's because of them that we're there. I have talked with Mike and with others in the commission. We have worked, we're going to Europe soon. We have 26 distributors that we're lining up there. So it has helped to narrow us into a country that everyone wants to go to. Everyone wants to take a vacation there. But many people do not know the amount of commitment and the amount of time it takes to even get a project over there.
Does that narrow in on your response as you're looking for a representative?
Thank you. Can I have a follow-up?
Follow-up.
I mean, obviously, I don't know your business. Is it of the scope where it would have been very difficult for you to have that entree privately? It wouldn't have worked. You had to go through an organization like the state.
Absolutely.
Right? Okay.
Absolutely.
Good. Thank you.
My name is Don Eggleston. I'm president of Serra Architects in Portland, and here as a member of Team Oregon, which is a group of four small professional services firms who banded together to do a kind of a public-private project with OECDD and the International Sustainable Development Foundation. And to answer Representative Ringo's comment, as a single practitioner in architectural firm, there is no way without the help of the state that small firms that provide professional services have any kind of an introduction into any foreign country without that connection and without somebody there on the ground to help, you know, introduce you to people and help you, you know, get the word out of what you do. And we are a direct result of the effort that they put forth with the Team Oregon and being able to get a grant from the federal government for sustainable development practices in Tainan City, Taiwan, which all came about as a direct result of the efforts of Mike and his department and Office of Trade and Information Center in Taipei. So to go back and answer your question, small individual service firms don't have a chance without that.
Chairman Butler and committees, especially Representative Ringo. I'm Jim Snodgrass, Vice President of Export Sales for Contact Lumber Company in Portland, Oregon. We're a secondary wood products manufacturer in Oregon with our office in Portland, but a manufacturing plant in Prineville and one in Lakeview that employs about 450 people. I'm a past president of the Wood Molding and Millwork Producers Association, which is an international trade association, so I can certainly answer your question directly that that group certainly does not have, you know, the expertise. Yes, they are to promote wood products internationally, but not the connections that the state of Oregon has throughout, you know, the world, you might say, especially in Southeast Asia. And I specifically have been able to take quite a bit of use of this OECD, especially in Japan. Recently in Korea, I have done three trade shows in Korea, the third one just being this February. And it took a while, but thanks to their persistence, and I guess in mine, I did come back with two distributors for our products from Korea from that trip. And again, Japan, as you all know, I've been working there, and again, with their help, with the coordination and the programs that are available, it's made it possible for me to stick it out, you might say, in those markets when things are tough. But I remember the very first trip that I took to Japan, and they said, you know, we're concerned because many American companies are here when it's hot, and then they're not here when it's not. And our company and myself made a commitment that we were going to, if we wanted to sell in those markets, we're going to stay there for the good times and the bad times. And the programs that the OECD has had available have made it so that I could stay in those markets, and things are improving. And so I'm really appreciate their help.
Thank you very much. Let's see, Mr. Pittman, did you want to add testimony? I think you were interrupted right at the very first. Your company does do business overseas abroad with the assistance of OECDD?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Our company is a very, very small company. We only have 29 employees. But I would like to make a couple of points that in trying to move to overseas markets, we have absolutely no way to find the contacts that we need without the OEDD. the OEDD and their help in these countries on the ground, such as Jepson, which is a very good example, with their help, we're able to identify interested companies for distributorship, identify and qualify these people. Without that, we could not do that. It would take years and years and years. We just couldn't do it. There's just no way. I'd like to make a point, too, that the OEDD does help us in certain areas, such as gathering information and things like this. But please don't ever get the impression that we don't pay our own way. We do definitely pay our own way and are more than willing to pay whatever is needed to do to continue this. Proprietary information cannot be divulged, especially for one of a company's our size. We manufacture tape for non-particulate tape in critical environment areas, such as silicon industry, the hard disk drive industry. There are no associations, to answer your question, Representative, for us to research. So we are really limited to having the state's help. The people that are involved, Mike Doyle and all of his staff, they just go well beyond what they're expected to do. We get an update monthly on what's going on in certain areas to give us the opportunity to gather intelligence on whether we want to enter that market or even attempt to enter that market.
In other countries other than where you're
yes,
already
Yes, Brazil, selling. Russia, okay. All over the world. So we have this continuing flow of information, and all it took was starting with our local economic development, which is SEDCOR, and participating a little bit, and at every meeting there has been a representative from OEDD to answer our questions. So it just goes well beyond. I hope I've answered any questions that were asked.
Representative Ringo is recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You're all praising the glories of the International Trade Division. Are there things that it's not doing because it doesn't have the resources, and if we gave it more money, that it could help you more?
Well, I have utilized a grant to subsidize, you might say, trade shows, and I think depending on the products. You know, for some people, a trade show is worthwhile; for others, it's not. But again, especially in my case, it's been able to help me sustain that, and so I hope those things would continue. Market information, I don't know the ins and outs of their budget and so forth, but the market information is extremely helpful to us. Again, things as individual companies, we just can't do.
That's fine.
Let me just ask Mr. Snodgrass, your association doesn't have overseas contacts. It's a U.S. association.
Well, it has international membership, but does not have the network of gathered information that that we're talking about.
All right, thank you. Representative Ringo?
Well, this is one of the questions I asked right off the bat, and I'm just trying to understand whether there are other services that you folks would like to see offered that you would find helpful, or whether you're satisfied that that this agency is doing the things it needs to be doing, and you're satisfied with it.
Representative Pringle, I would like to answer that it's so hard to say what's going to happen tomorrow. For today, we had so little before, and we have so much now. How do I compare? How do I even get through what I'm getting now? This is an ongoing thing, a very large commitment to time and effort. I'm very pleased with what's happened so far.
Thank you very much, Mr. Pittman. We do have some invited testimony. Any other? I'm sure there's a limit of questions, and we do appreciate you gentlemen taking your time away from your businesses and the other activities that you have in order to come today. Thank you very much. Other questions? Yes, Representative Johnson.
Mr. Chair, would you four gentlemen be willing to leave your cards so that if any members of the committee didn't have a thorough enough opportunity to explore questions with you, would you entertain questions from us?
Thank you. And if you'll just provide those cards, then the committee administrator
Robin Lamont from Legislative Fiscal will assist us with that. Thank you very much, Mr. Pittman, Mr. Snodgrass, Mr. Stewart, Mr. Eggleston. Thank you. And Professor Tony Anthony Ruffalo, Dr. Ruffalo, and then we also have John Latimer here. Let's go ahead to Dr. Ruffalo first.
Mr. Chairman, while the witness comes up, I'd like to give a brief introduction of Dr. Ruffalo.
Okay, thank
you. He is a professor of urban studies and planning at Portland State University, where he specializes in state and local finance, transportation, urban economics, and regional economic development. He has a bachelor's degree in economics from MIT and a PhD in economics from UCLA. Prior to joining the faculty at Portland State University in 1980, he spent 6 years as an economist and senior economist with the Federal Reserve Bank of Philadelphia. I was reading the 27 performance measures provided to us by Economic Development Department. I read it 3 times, and I couldn't get anything out of it. So I asked the professor to help me read it and tell me exactly what does it say. And I would like him to tell the committee what he told me.
Thank you very much. Professor Ruffalo?
Mr. Chair, committee members, for the record, I'm Tony Ruffalo, and I'm on the faculty at Portland State University. And as Senator Yee indicated prior to the session, she had shown me the budget note that requires development of criteria for allocating resources within the Community Development Fund and a reporting process to ensure that the report contains sufficient information to enable the legislature to evaluate the effectiveness of programs and services. She then asked me to look through the performance measures that were provided and to evaluate them with respect to these criteria. Basically, my conclusion and the information that I provided to Senator Yee was that the criteria really did not meet the objectives of the budget note. That in particular, what the Community Development Department had done was to identify principles and strategies. But principles and strategies do not provide information for making relative judgments. And there are also an issue of criteria and the information within it that allows for relative evaluations of effectiveness. And again, the principles and strategies really do not seem to provide that information. In addition, there appear to be some specific requirements. One that I particularly noted was that there is a requirement that the cost per job saved or retained be calculated. And this information, again, was not provided. Then Senator Yee asked me if I could comment on some of the specific measures. I didn't go through a detailed listing of them, but I'll try and keep this fairly brief. Basically, in trying to evaluate performance measures, what we would like is some measures that are relatively objective, that are clearly tied to the program goals, and that you can use for some measure of cost effectiveness or some other relative weighting in terms of the achievement of the objective versus the cost that is incurred in the program.
Dr. Ruffalo, yes. Is the report you're reading from available, a copy of it?
It's an informal report, but I could certainly
perhaps that would be very helpful, and that could be circulated to the committee, and we can get copies of it. Maybe we could just ask a few issues relative to some of the comments that you've made thus far. I'd like to just ask, harkening back to the 40-page report with the 27 performance measurements, the community development is something that's kind of difficult to know how many jobs are created, how quickly. How is it really something that's easily measurable?
Not at all. I mean, if you look at the academic literature, there are a variety of approaches that have been made to try and evaluate economic development efforts. The most sound methods look at large programs and use statistical methodology. And basically, the conclusion from the academic literature is that these programs tend not to be effective, that they, it's relatively simple to say we have this client and they created these jobs. The real question often is what would have happened in the absence of the intervention, whether the jobs would have been created anyway. And then there are also the questions of the cost of the jobs. I would say that evaluating an economic development program is quite difficult, especially if you have objectives other than general economic development, where you're trying to target it at specific issues such as helping the disadvantaged or helping distressed communities. Nevertheless, there is there are ways in which that can be measured. There are ways of identifying it. I think much of it is probably better indicated in the report from the auditor in terms of the detail and the types of measures that you would that you want to look at.
I think in that process, and I don't recall the auditor's report specifically, relative to the community development portion of it, but one of the things that Representative Ringo called out just recently was that for a very small amount of investment in economic development in metropolitan Oregon, a huge number of jobs were created, whereas with a very substantial investment in economic development in rural Oregon, very few jobs were created. Is that build it and they will come,
I think the issue really is how much credit you would give to the Economic Development Department for what happened in Portland. Again, as an academic and looking at the record with respect to economic development efforts, I would argue that much of the development that occurred in Portland would have occurred whether or not there were any intervention. Again, it's a question of did they come only because of things like the SIP program, or would they have come in the absence of these programs? And I think there was one specific company that had made a request, I believe it was in Yamhill County, and they were turned down and then changed their mind and said they would come in the absence of the program. They ended up not coming for other reasons, but it indicates how difficult it is to attribute the growth to the program, because clearly it's in the best interest of the people who are benefiting from the program to say, yes, it's helping us.
Okay, thank you. Questions of Dr. Ruffalo, members of the committee. Representative Smith is recognized.
Thank you. You made the statement that the jobs potentially could have been created anyway, or that the companies would have located anyway. In your analysis or in your opinion, have you looked at what other states are doing in trying to attract industry into communities in their states?
I haven't personally looked into it, but I have looked in the academic literature, which evaluates the efforts in other states. And basically, the conclusion of the academic literature is that there's not much evidence that these efforts really have much impact if you look at it on a statistical basis. And in the areas where there does appear to be an impact, it tends to be a relatively expensive method of generating additional jobs.
Question?
Follow-up, Representative Smith.
Have you ever had an opportunity to look at a site request sheet that companies circulate out when they're looking at growing or moving?
Haven't.
The particular requirements that...
No, I haven't.
Comment.
Follow-up.
It's kind of interesting. For the last 10 years, my job's been to create jobs in rural eastern Oregon, and let me tell you what companies do. They send out a checklist. The first thing they ask for is, are you in an enterprise zone? If you're not, you're off the list. Second thing they ask for is zoning requirements. Third thing they look for is what cash can you put on the table, whether it's hard cash or land. And many times, especially in rural Oregon, these companies will not come to the table. They will not talk with you unless you have those things in order. And that's just the reality of bringing industry in. I know firsthand that companies have walked away from the table because we were unable to put $50,000 on the table, and they just moved to another community or to another state.
With all due respect, while certainly you can make a difference in terms of distressed areas, and in fact, in some of my previous reports to the Economic Development Department, I've indicated that if the state, for example, is willing to target enough money to distressed areas, it can certainly have an impact in terms of increasing employment in those areas. But this tends to be a movement of activities from one area to another. And the evidence is that it's not very...
If that's from the state of Washington or the state of Idaho or the rural eastern Oregon, I'm all in favor of that.
Perhaps not. But the evidence is that the overall effectiveness, unless you're really targeting a fairly specific area, relatively targeted areas, you really don't have much of an impact. And then certainly, if you look at it from the state perspective and look at the overall impact, it's negligible. I would not certainly not argue that you can't, by putting enough money into a particular area, increase the employment in that area. And to the extent that that's one of the state's objectives, then that may be one of the things that you want to look at. On the other hand, as I said, the evidence from the academic literature is that these tend to be fairly expensive efforts, that the cost per job created on net tends to be fairly high. Certainly there are areas of rural Oregon that have grown without specific targeted investments.
I think it's important when you're looking at the cost per job, you also look at that cost per job over what period of time. You know, when you look at rural Eastern Oregon, perhaps the cost per job is a job for $25,000. But then if that company is going to be there for 20, 30, 40 years and is going to be participating in the community, paying taxes and having a payroll tax, perhaps that's an investment worth making.
And perhaps it is. But again, if we look at the statistics, we observe that many of the businesses that are being aided are small businesses, and that large numbers of small businesses do not persist for 20 or 30 years, that they really go out of business in a fairly short period of time. And that's what the summary statistics tend to pick up.
I'd like to bring you to Eastern Oregon. Thank you.
Any other questions for Senator Yee?
I just want to make a comment to what Representative Smith has said, that I think if the state has overall favorable tax environment or favorable regulation environment, I mean not a taxing state or not a highly regulated state, that kind of environment will bring business and industries, and they will come whether there is a long list of offerings from local communities or not, they will come. So I don't think making a long list of offerings on the site will make too much difference.
No, not at all.
If the state is already favorably business.
We're out of time quickly here. Dr. Ruffalo, did you have any more further comments that you needed to
I can leave you a copy of my
report, if you would, please.
Senator Yee.
Thank you, and we'll have that circulated through our staff. And let's see, a further question, Representative Ringo.
Well, I was just curious as to what academic reports you were relying on and whether you might be able to provide them in the next day or two. Or
well, it just so happens that I did a study for the Economic Development Department about 6 years ago. It's not up to date, but it's a literature review of business development tax incentives. And certainly I can provide a copy of this to the staff member as well.
And that's 6 years old?
It's 6 years old, yes. It doesn't have the current references. It would take me a while to update all the references. On the other hand, I don't think the academic literature has changed that dramatically over this six-year period.
All I want is one or two references. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Dr. Ruffalo. And then we also had John Latimer, but I'm wondering, John, we are out of time, and in order to give your, and I assume you're here relative to the audit report which you provided under date of April 17th, so I think probably it would be better to, would you be available to come back tomorrow? Would that work out for your schedule? Okay. Let me do this. There is some discussion that needs to be held, and I think that Representative Smith could probably enlighten us, having come from part of this market. So I would appreciate that. Is there anything further that we need to accomplish in the committee at this time? Thank you very much, Dr. Ruffalo. I appreciate you being here. And we will return to the subject tomorrow with John Latimer being from the Secretary of State Audit Division tomorrow starting up. And so with that, we'll go ahead and close this portion of the public hearing.